Good morning and welcome into The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here with you, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you are having a good Thursday. Thursday, that filler day between Wednesday and Friday. For some reason, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday get all the attention. Tuesday and Thursday, they're just the filler days. Well, there's a lot to talk about on this filler day, and I hope we're going to have some fun with it. How are you today? Hopefully you're doing well. Let's glance over here at Facebook Live. Looks like things are starting to heat up over there. Good, good, good. Those of you in the podcast world, thanks for being along as well. Whenever, wherever you may be listening, it's good to have you here. Thank you so much. And I'm trying to think here. I had a little bobble right before we went live, and it's got me a little bit discombobulated. So I think everything is good. Yesterday, we had an issue. We had an issue with the Facebook Live audio feed, and I corrected it. I tested everything. It all worked afterwards. And then this morning, when it was time for everything to kick up, the pre-show music started rolling. Those of you who watch the Facebook Live feed know that there's some jazz cuts and things like that that play just before the show goes live. You podcast listeners don't get that. But I looked over at the feed, and there was no audio. Now, this is something I had fixed yesterday, something that was supposedly working perfectly yesterday, and then today, no, zip, zero, nada, bupkis, nothing there. But today, everything seems to be working just fine. Here, let me look over here. Is that okay? That's good. Okay, good. You know, I apologize for getting into the tech world here. As we get started, but you know, when you notice something is wrong, you need to take care of it. So I just took care of it, and I'm looking at the audio bumping for the Facebook feed, and everything seems to be okay there. Oh, good. Glad. Yikes. Let's see. Vincent notes that there is a cutting in and out on the audio. It's feeding out just fine here. Which I can only assume that the reason we have an issue with Facebook Live audio is that the computer that's sending that audio out is under a heavy load, and it's hiccuping. That's the only thing I can assume. So my apologies for that. You guys on Facebook Live, download the podcast. That's all I can say, because we're going now. Nothing I can do about it. We are in gear, rolling downhill, picking up speed. I can't change things. So, oh, my apologies. Wow, what do we have today? It is an interesting day. We start off the morning noting that Elijah Cummings has passed away. Democrat who was the chairman of the House Oversight Committee who was involved in the Benghazi hearings, who was involved in the impeachment hearings. Elijah Cummings, a high-profile Democrat, has passed away. Our prayers and sympathies to him, his family. He leaves behind a wife and other loved ones as well. And right off the bat, I want to say that I'm not insensitive to this man's passing and how it affects his family and his loved ones, because there were people around him who loved him and cared for him. Having said that, I have to say this. We do not need to forget that Elijah Cummings was a very corrupt politician. And in spite of the fact that we are going to give him a little bit of time today, we don't need to forget that. We need to remember that not long ago, very recently, he and his wife were involved in a scandal. What started as a potential conflict of interest and perhaps an ethics violation for the powerful House Oversight Chairman Elijah Cummings mushroomed into a growing corruption scandal with far-reaching criminal implications that threatened to bring down the influential Democrat along with his wife. wife is named Maya. The scandal involved a series of entities created by Maya Rocky Moore Cummings, similar in scope to the Clinton Foundation, in which a not-for-profit charity is created alongside a private LLC, or LCC. The then, when donations come in, a portion of those dollars are funneled back into the company, which, of course, was controlled by Maya Cummings. According to the Daily Caller News Foundation, Maya Rocky Moore Cummings Charity, called the Center for Global Policy Solutions, paid her for-profit venture, Global Policy Solutions LLC, it was an LLC, over $250,000 in management fees between 2013 and 2015. That's according to the charity's audited financial statements. In addition to receiving management fees, Cummings also received payments for cost sharing, in which the charity pays for its share of equipment, personnel, and other expenditures. To complicate matters even further, which of course is by design, Rocky Moore Cummings' charity is funded by companies that have dealings with her husband, Representative Elijah Cummings, which makes for a very cozy relationship for everyone involved. National Legal and Policy Center investigator Tom Anderson told the Daily Caller News Foundation, "It's self-dealing, it's taking the charity's resources and turning them into personal profits. And IRS law doesn't allow a charity for this purpose. This isn't for the public interest, this is for her personal interest. You can't do that." In May, the NALPC filed a complaint with the IRS against Rocky Moore Cummings Charity and LLC, alleging that companies with interests before the House Oversight Committee or buying influence from Chairman Elijah Cummings through their donations to the party. The Maryland congressman, on his latest financial disclosure report, listed his wife's LLC as an asset worth between $250,000 to $500,000. New allegations surfaced, stemming from her original financial disclosure of self-dealing and perjury. According to the Daily Caller News Foundation, an additional complaint filed with the IRS by a watchdog group called the National Legal and Policy Center amended its original May 20th complaint against Maya Rocky Moore Cummings Charity, alleging that the nonprofits, along with her for-profit company, may have personally and illegally benefited her husband. NLPC also alleges that Rocky Moore Cummings may have committed perjury by answering no in her charity's 2015 tax return when asked if it conducted business with an entity owned by an officer or director of the charity. That complaint states, "As a director, officer, and key employee of CGPS, at the same time she was the sole governor of Global Policy Solutions LLC, Maya Rocky Moore Cummings should have answered yes. The false entry appears to be willful. Form 990 was signed by Maya Rocky Moore Cummings under penalties of perjury." Scott Walker, the president of the conservative watchdog group Capital Research Center, said it's a red flag for a powerful member like Elijah Cummings to have a family member receiving money from entities with issues before his powerful committee. Both the congressman and his wife have refused to discuss, of course, allegations. The complaint also asked the IRS to investigate that shared leadership, integrated operations, and shared address and physical facilities of her two companies. They were both under the same roof in the same offices, and Elijah Cummings acknowledged financial benefit from the company. Illegal activity. Also, remember during the Benghazi hearings, he was caught communicating with the Clintons' camp and giving them information they needed to know. So, do not be deceived, my friends. Although this man has passed away and his family deserves our sympathy and a little grace, we must remember that Elijah Cummings was a progressive, corrupt politician. He represented a district in Baltimore, Maryland, which has recently come under fire for being rat infested and in serious need of help. And the man has been in office for all these years, for decades. And the situation just continues to get worse. He is in D.C. to represent those people. He is there on their behalf, for their benefit, or was. And yet, it took conservative outsiders to go into Baltimore, Maryland, voluntarily to clean things up. And they did in a small area. Just to show what could be done with a little bit of self-willed effort. Something that is not allowed by progressive government. Everything has to be controlled by and approved by progressive government. And so nothing gets done that doesn't advance the progressive government. And that was his district. We can hope that someone who is not corrupt, someone who is a conservative, will be elected to represent these people and help them, truly help them on the national stage. We can hope. But all things considered, where this is, the political influence in the area, the probability's not high. The probability is not high. But probability is high for something else. And that is the re-election of President Donald Trump. And that is good news for this Thursday. Coming to us I'm looking at sources here. President Donald Trump looks poised to win a second term by landslide. Landslide. It's coming from IJR.com. A landslide. This is according to a new report released by Moody's Analytics. Moody's Analytics, which has correctly predicted all but one presidential election since 1980, says Trump could easily win the 2020 presidential election by an even larger margin than his victory in 2016. The models found Trump is going to win either 289, 332, or 351 Electoral College votes in 2020. Those results are based on how consumers feel about the economy and their economic situation, stock market gains, and prospects for unemployment. Mark Zandi, he's the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, and he's the co-author of the report, told CNBC, "It's all about turnout," and adds that if Democrats are not energized and there is a low turnout, Trump will steamroll the competition. Zandi added that is the same a year from now, if the information is same a year from now or roughly, then the power of incumbency is strong and Trump's election odds are very good. I apologize for that. That sentence is written very strangely. Of the three models, Trump fares best with the pocketbook model, which focuses how people feel. It focuses on how people feel about their personal finances. In that model, he wins 351 electoral votes to the generic Democrats, 187. The report emphasizes that record turnout is vital to a Democratic victory. Ooh, I want to come back to that. In the unemployment model, Trump wins 332 electoral votes to the Democrats, 206. And in the stock market model, he wins 289 electoral votes to the Democrats, 249. This new report was well received by Trump, who shared it in a tweet saying, "Looks good to me." Wow. The report emphasizes that a record turnout is vital to a Democratic victory. This is what I said about a Republican victory in 2016. A record turnout and an overwhelming win was necessary for a Republican victory. Why? Because in order to overcome Democrat shenanigans, Republicans would have to outperform the Democrats by a huge, huge margin. Well, all of that shenanigan planning, all of that subterfuge is still in place. And they've been working hard to recover from the loss. So I would say that in 2020, an overwhelming victory is necessary for Trump in order to maintain his presidency. Because the left is not going to take this line down. They are just not going to. So, this is something to keep an eye on as we press forward and watch the election unfold. More after the break as the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Good to have you along today. It is the Thursday edition of the program. Yeah. Started off with a little bit of a bumpy road, but other than that, I think things are... They're going to be all right. They're pretty much going to be okay. My fingers are crossed. Oh, my gosh. Just as a short explanation, just for the Facebook Live folks, the podcast feed... What the podcast listeners get is what's recorded right here in the studio. It is, it's the microphone, the audio sources, and everything. It goes straight into a digital recording that I do a little bit of tweaking to and then dump onto the server for the podcast. And the Facebook Live feed gets that, but it's sent, it gets the actual live feed, but it's sent through a computer to Facebook. Facebook then, you know, does what it has to do, sends it back out again. It actually, between the time I actually speak a word and it hits Facebook and comes to you, there is anywhere from 7 to 12 seconds of delay that I've looked at just coming back to me. So it depends on network traffic and the like. The reason Facebook listeners on this particular edition of the program are having a little bit of stuttering every few seconds is because the computer sending the audio to Facebook is overworked. It's having issues. It's handling a handful of different things, including sending the feed to Facebook, and it's just not coping with it very well. It's just not. In an effort to, let me just make a quick adjustment here. Let's see if maybe, no, that won't help. That won't help. That won't help. That won't help. I have all these video backgrounds that I put up while I'm working, while we're doing this. And the video is one of the things that, that causes the issues. It's processing video, and video takes up a lot of bandwidth. So, I was just kind of hoping that maybe, oh, well, that would work. Oh, that would work. No, that won't work. But that will work. Okay, let's put that up there. That's a still image. Maybe that'll help some. Okay, moving forward. Let's see. What did we just... We were just talking about Trump and winning the election. And the Democrats working hard to keep that from happening. One of the things that they're doing right now, even as we speak, is they're pitching a hissy fit. They are trying to impeach a duly elected, legally elected president. They're lying to the American public about all manner of things. Remember, Adam Schiff lied for better than 2 years about having conclusive, concrete information that Trump was involved with the Russians, that there was collusion. He never produced it. He just kept lying. Because he knew, and the Democrats all knew, that a lie makes its way around the world faster than a truth can put its pants on. And people will believe the lie before they will believe the truth. Once the lie makes the rounds, the truth has a lot of trouble convincing people the lie is a lie. And one of those lies is this impeachment process. Nancy Pelosi has said she's not going to take a vote. They're just going to push forward with it. And there are those who say, constitutionally, that's fine because the House can make up its own rules for how it's handled. I'm not really sure how true that is, but that's what some are saying. Some even on the right are saying that. They're working on painting as bad an image in the public eye as possible for President Trump. Hence what happened yesterday with that meeting where you've seen the picture by now of Nancy Pelosi standing, pointing at the president, dressing him down, and then she and her cohorts, Schumer and all the other guys' names slipped my mind, they get up and they leave. And then we have this picture of three empty chairs across from the president. And Pelosi says Trump had a meltdown. Trump says Pelosi had a meltdown. I've seen somebody reading a transcript of what happened, and it doesn't seem like there was anything that should have caused anybody to walk out. But there are those, and those with good experience in this field, in the realm here, who say that the Democrats, these three Democrats, went into this meeting knowing that they were going to find something to object to and walk out over. And so they staged this and got up and walked out straight to the TV cameras so they could have something else to taint the president with. So this is all just more political theater. This is just more. It's another act in the dog and pony show. That's what this is. So you see, all of this stuff is being staged to influence opinion. And those on the right are refusing to comply and cooperate with the dog and pony show. Mike Pence has told the House Democrats, no, you're not getting my documents for your impeachment fishing expedition. This is coming to us from HermanCain.com. Remember, the House of Representatives has not voted to initiate an impeachment inquiry. Nancy Pelosi merely said, it's on, and put Adam Schiff in charge of it. Schiff, who follows no rules but his own and changes them at whatever whim suits him, has apparently decided the impeachment inquiry is about anything and everything he can find to make it about. That's why House investigations are so rife for abuse. No investigation ever has to end if the majority or the committee chairman doesn't want it to, because there are always more questions that must be answered, or documents that must be turned over, or whatever. They're never satisfied if they don't want to be. They just keep looking. And if anyone is wise to their game and doesn't want to cooperate, it's the perfect opportunity to scream obstruction or cover up or whatever feeds the political narrative they're trying to establish. Vice President Pence is clearly wise to the game, and he recognizes Schiff is demanding documents he has no legitimate reason to see. You can't just demand whatever you can think of on the theory that it might contain a reason for impeachment. Yet that's exactly the game Schiff is trying to play. Vice President Mike Pence declined on Tuesday to submit documents to the House Representative Committees pursuing an impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump, his office said, calling the probe self-proclaimed and the requests for information too broad. Pence's counsel, Matthew Morgan, said in a letter to three Democratic lawmakers leading the inquiry that the scope of documents requested included some, quote, which are clearly not vice presidential records, pursuant to a self-proclaimed impeachment inquiry, end quote. Morgan had said Pence's office was prepared to work with the committees if they wish to return to the regular order of legitimate legislative oversight requests, and the committees have appropriate requests for information solely in the custody of the office of the vice president. This sounds like it fits an already established Schiff pattern. Demand things you have no legitimate reason to have, and then carp about obstruction when you're told no. It's no way to run a legitimate impeachment inquiry, but that's not what this is. And making a genuine determination about whether Trump should be removed from office or not, office is not the goal here. The goal is to create a sense among the electorate that Trump and his administration are hiding things. It's to make sure that this idea dominates news cycles and can become a plausible campaign theme for the 2020 Democratic nominee. The low-information voter, who doesn't know what a fraud Schiff is, because the media certainly won't report that he is, figures that there must be a legitimate reason Congress needs to see these documents, and considers it untoward that people in the president's circle are stonewalling. This is hilarious when you consider it was only a year ago that a Republican-controlled House was undertaking a very legitimate investigation of the Carter Page wiretap warrants and how they came about, and was demanding documents such as the FISA application it had every reason to see. When top FBI officials stonewalled those requests, the media cheered them on and accused House Republicans like Devin Nunes of holding a phony investigation for purely political purposes. To this day, the media don't care if the FBI used a phony partisan-financed document to justify wiretapping a campaign official from the party out of power. But let Adam Schiff go fishing for any and every document he can think of, regardless of whether he has any reason to see it, and watch the media obediently play along with Schiff's cover-up narrative when Pence refuses. Regardless of whether the House votes to impeach Trump, he's not going to be removed from office by the Senate. And House Democrats know that. This is all about making you feel uncomfortable with the way the administration operates. And in order to do that, they need to lay traps like this. Let's not help them by believing their nonsense. Okay? Let me go back to a sentence that was in a paragraph way before this. And that is, they're never satisfied if they don't want to be. They just keep looking. Do you remember the hearings we've just been through? The Mueller investigation? They were never satisfied because they didn't want to be. They just kept looking for things to condemn the president with. And when Mueller sat before them and they weren't satisfied, and it was obvious that he didn't even know what was going on, they had to find something else to do. And this is that something else. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. No bumper music there. And that's really weird. I don't know what's going on. What is it with things on my computers today? Anyway. So, well, there we go. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Hopefully you are having a beautiful day in your neighborhood as well. And I honestly cannot believe I missed this birthday last Friday. Someone celebrated a birthday last Friday who I should have recognized. And I feel very, very, I feel very sad in missing his birthday. So today, I want to say happy birthday to...
Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
Yes.
I can't hear you!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Oh! Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
If nautical nonsense be something you wish...
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Then drop on the deck and flop like a fish!
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Ready? SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants!
Yep. Last Friday, SpongeBob SquarePants turned 20 years old. He's been around for 20 years. He spends his day getting into wacky adventures along with his buddies Patrick Starfish, Squidward Tentacles, Mr. Krabs. And without speaking down to kids, this lovable, absorbent square doles out some life lessons along the way. But, and you knew this was coming, didn't you? But, a University of Washington professor thinks SpongeBob is violent and racist. Racist! Yes, seriously. Holly M. Barker has penned a piece titled, quote, Unsettling SpongeBob and the Legacies of Violence on Bikini Bottom. It is time for a medication adjustment for someone. Quote, billions of people around the globe are well acquainted with SpongeBob SquarePants and the antics of the title character and his friends on Bikini Bottom. By the same token, there is an absence of public discourse about the whitewashing of violent American military activities through SpongeBob's occupation and reclaiming of the bottom of Bikini Atoll's lagoon. SpongeBob SquarePants and his friends play a role in normalizing the settler colonial takings of indigenous lands while erasing the ancestral Bikinian people from their non-fictional homeland, reads the abstract for Barker's piece.
Several bad puns later.
Barker's abstract asserts that SpongeBob has colonized Bikini Bottom, the underwater home for the lovable characters, and claims the cartoon is whitewashing the violent American military activities against natives on Pacific Islands, specifically the Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands, used by the U.S. military for nuclear testing. This article exposes the complicity of popular culture in maintaining American military hegemonies in Oceania, while amplifying the enduring of the Marshallese people, who maintain deeply spiritual and historical connections to the land, even land they cannot occupy due to residual radiation contamination from U.S. nuclear weapons testing, through a range of cultural practices, including language, song, and weaving. This article also considers the gendered violence of nuclear colonialism and the resilience of Marshallese women.
One hour later.
The Bikini Atoll remains uninhabitable, and some conspiracy theorists claim the cast of SpongeBob SquarePants were mutated by the testing.
3 weeks later.
Barker declares that as an American character allowed to live there, SpongeBob showed his privilege of not caring about the detonation of nuclear bombs. SpongeBob's presence on Bikini Bottom continues the violent and racist expulsion of indigenous peoples from their lands, and in this case, their cosmos, that enables U.S. hegemonic powers to extend their military and colonial interests in the post-war era.
2,000 years later.
Barker even rips the theme song, saying it denounces Bikini Bottom as full of nautical nonsense.
Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
I can't hear you!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Oh! Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
Everybody's like,
absorbent and yellow and porous is he!
SpongeBob!
If nautical nonsense be something you wish,
everybody knows.
Then drop on the deck and flop like a fish!
Are you blind?
Ready? SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants! SpongeBob SquarePants!
The song's directives ensconced in humor provide the viewer with an active role in defining Bikini Bottom as a place of nonsense, as the audience is instructed, if nautical nonsense be something you wish, drop on the deck and flop like a fish, she writes.
Six and a half hours late.
Barker says the children's show is full of gender bias as well, writing, quote, all of the main characters on the show are male. Sandy Cheeks, a squirrel that lives underwater with the aid of an old-fashioned diving suit, is, of course, a female. But Barker says, she's just a token. In conclusion, Barker writes, quote, we should be uncomfortable with a hamburger-loving American community's occupation of Bikini's Lagoon and the ways that it erodes every aspect of sovereignty.
3 weeks later.
Nautical nonsense, indeed. This is emblematic of the idiocy that we find on college campuses today. College professors so deeply wrapped up in fictional characters representing oppression. Come on. Have we collectively lost our minds? I think we have.
One eternity later.
And
meanwhile,
people are paying for their kids to go to this professor's college. The University of Washington. Holly M. Barker. God love her. Make sure you check the show notes today for this story and click through the links and see her actual piece and see what a nut job this person actually is. Holy moly.
Later.
Yes.
Eventually.
Yes.
A few moments later.
What time?
8:01 p.m.
Yeah. I tell you, if we don't actually wake up and hold the college atmosphere, the college environment accountable to reality, then we are lost as a nation. And I realize that it has been a point of pride for families to send their children off to college. At one time, that was very important. Education, learning the facts, knowing the truth, learning how to think rather than being told what to think, are vital qualities your children, your grandchildren, must have. We, as family, must teach those who come after us how to think, not what to think. We must show them the truth. We must show them the folly, the fantasy of leftism, progressivism, liberalism, and contrast it with reality. And we must help them see through what they will face as they grow older in life. Because life is only so long. There is only so much time. And we can't waste it being deceived by people like this professor at the University of Washington. We have to teach our kids, our grandchildren, the truth about the life around them and help them recognize the difference between fact and fantasy. I had a lot of fun with that article, SpongeBob, but the tragedy of it is that it really is happening. And there are people who sit under this professor, and this professor determines a grade for them, which could affect them being able to get a college degree that they so deeply desire. And that's just wrong. Absolutely wrong. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Welcome back to Funky Town. For some reason, the music just got me. Wow. All righty. It is, it's been a crazy day. I mean, when you've got a college professor who seriously is condemning SpongeBob SquarePants. Come on. SpongeBob SquarePants.
Eventually.
Yeah, you just got to think, well, college campuses are a place where psychiatric care is deeply, deeply needed. And so is Washington, D.C. When we look at what's happening right now, I talked about this investigation, this impeachment inquiry that's going on. And there's a story that comes to us from the Daily Wire, and I want to touch on that. I don't think I'm going to get to all of Ryan Saavedra's story here. I'm going to get to enough of it to give you the idea, though, and I want to pass this along to you because it is, it's an example of what's actually going on, what's really going on. And the title of the story is Schiff, Adam Schiff, pressured a witness to say Trump pressured Ukraine to investigate Biden. Democrat House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff reportedly pressed U.S. Special Representative to Ukraine, Kurt Volker, in a secret meeting on October 3rd, to say that President Donald Trump pressured Ukrainian officials to investigate former vice president and current Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden. Quote, Volker denied that was the case, noting that Ukrainian leaders did not even know the aid was being withheld and that they believed their relationship with the United States was moving along satisfactorily without them having done anything, Trump mentioned in his notorious July 25th phone conversation with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is from the Washington Examiner. That's what they reported. It goes on to say, when Volcker repeatedly declined to agree to Schiff's characterization of events, Schiff said, Ambassador, you're making this much more complicated than it has to be. The central allegation that Democrats are claiming that Trump is guilty of is engaging in a quid pro quo with Ukraine, instructing them to investigate Biden in exchange for U.S. military support. Schiff asked, part of the other context is vital military support is being withheld from the Ukraine during this period, right? Volcker responded, that is not part of the context at the time. At least to my knowledge, they, the Ukrainian leaders, were not aware of that. It was at this point that Schiff reportedly began to press Volcker. And there is an exchange here, a back and forth, which I'll give you part of, but not all of. You need to pull up the show notes for yourself today. They'll be online right after we get through here at Facebook Live. Podcast listeners, they're there now. Go look at them. Schiff asked Volcker whether he would agree that, quote, no president of the United States should ever ask a foreign leader to help intervene in a U.S. election. Volcker said, I agree with that. Schiff continued, and that would be particularly egregious if it was done in the context of withholding foreign assistance. Volcker balked and said, we're getting now into, you know, a conflation of these things that I didn't think was actually there. Schiff wanted Volcker to agree that if it's inappropriate for a president to seek foreign help in a U.S. election, it would be doubly so if a president was doing that at a time when the United States was withholding military support from a country. And again, Volcker did not agree, saying, I can't really speak to that. My understanding of the security assistance issue is... And then Schiff interrupts, saying, why can't you speak to that, Ambassador? You're a career diplomat. You know, you can understand the enormous leverage that a president would have while withholding military support from any ally at war with Russia. You can understand just how significant that would be, correct? And you can see what he's trying to do is back Volcker into a corner and make him say something that Volcker clearly doesn't believe. Volcker, who was actually involved, who was actually there, who knows the facts, who knows the truth. Adam Schiff is trying to get him to say something that is not true. Schiff has come under intense fire over the way he's handled the House Democrats' attempt to impeach Trump. During a congressional hearing in late September, Schiff made up quotes from Trump's phone call with Ukraine, quotes that did not exist in the transcript of the call. Schiff's move garnered intense national criticism from top lawmakers and political commentators. Representative Lee Zeldin, a Republican from New York, tweeted, quote, when you don't have facts on your side, some just make it up. The opening statement by their ringleader was full of Schiff. House Dems blatantly lying to justify their impeachment inquiry is horribly timed, poorly written, and badly intentioned. Representative Elise Stefanik, a Republican from New York, tweeted, it is disturbing and outrageous that Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee Adam Schiff opens up a hearing of this importance with improvised fake dialogue between President Trump and President Zelensky. We should focus on the facts. Britt Hume of Fox News tweeted, if the conversation were as damning as Schiff et al. Would like, he would have simply read directly from it instead of making up dialogue. Probably not surprising in light of the extravagant collusion claims he made for 2 years. Ohio Representative Jim Jordan tweeted, we now have both the transcript and the complaint. Anyone who reads them will see they prove what we already knew. Representative Adam Schiff and his cronies will peddle conspiracy theories and distort the truth to attack our president. It's wrong. Schiff also came under intense fire after it was revealed that his staff had contact with the whistleblower before the whistleblower actually filed an official complaint for him. In a separate report, the Examiner revealed that the whistleblower, a registered Democrat who had worked with Biden in the Obama White House, had also previously worked with two of Schiff's current aides. We have also heard that We have also heard other things about this as well. This is just that Schiff and his staff most likely wrote the whistleblower complaint. This is what we're dealing with today. This is who the Democrats are and what they are. Remember, there was a mention earlier in this story of a secret meeting where this pressing of Volcker happened. And that is one of the issues, that meetings are being held behind closed doors. Republicans are being shut out. This is a partisan witch hunt. It's exactly what President Trump has been saying it is. It is an effort to stir up as much dust as possible, to confuse people as much as possible, in order to shift opinion, public opinion. Because the Democrats want Donald Trump tried not before the Senate, not before Congress. They want him tried in the court of public opinion. You and I both know the court of public opinion is a bad, bad place to be judged, because the public forms opinion based on what they see on the evening news and on social media and through word of mouth from people who know nothing about what's really going on. So public opinion about a certain situation is going to be, generally speaking, completely wrong. But that suits the purposes of the Democrat Party. These socialists want our president to be judged guilty in the court of public opinion. Because truth doesn't matter. Only power and control matters. They lost what they had and they want it back. They had 8 years to lay a groundwork to keep building on, to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And just when they thought they would have 8 more to cinch the deal, they lost. And they're desperate. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a great day. And we'll see you right back here tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.